ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರಾವನಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರಾವನಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ವಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪೀ ಜನವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರಧಾರಿ ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರಾವನಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ವಿಹಾರಿ
ಜಯ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮತ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಡಿವೈನ್ ಗ್ರೇಸ್ ಎಸಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಶಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕಿ ಜಯ ಅನಂತ ಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದ ಕಿ ಜಯ ಗ್ರಂಥರಾಜ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಕಿ ಜಯ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಅಂಡ್ ಗೌರಂಗ if you don't mind, can you turn off those lights? It's the black switch. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಐ ಥಾಟ್ ಇಟ್ ವಾಸ್ ಟೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್ 16 ಇಸ್ ಇಟ್ 15 16 ಯೆಸ್ ಐ ಸಾ 15 ಯೆಸ್ಟರ್ಡೇ ಸೊ ಟುಡೇ ಇಸ್ 16 ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಕ್ಯಾಂಟೋ 5 ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ 8 ದಿ ಕ್ಯಾರೆಕ್ಟರ್ ಆಫ್ ಭರತ್ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ text 16 so this is a text in prose so we'll just read the translation and purport translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai Bharat Maharaj would think alas the deer is now helpless I am now very unfortunate and my mind is like a cunning hunter for it is always filled with cheating propensities and cruelty. The deer has put its faith in me, just as a good man who has a natural interest in good behavior forgets the misbehavior of a cunning friend and puts his faith in him. Although I have proved faithless, will this deer return and place its faith in me? Purport. Bharat Maharaj was very noble and exalted, and therefore, when the deer was absent from him, he thought himself unworthy to give it protection. Due to his attachment for the animal, he thought that the animal was as noble and exalted as he himself was. According to the logic of Atmavan Manyate Jagat, everyone thinks of others according to his own position. Therefore, Maharaj Bharat felt that the deer had left him due to his negligence and that due to the animal's noble heart, it would again return. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya ज्ञानांजन शलाखया चक्षुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदंतिकं वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिंधोभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। There are, first of all, it's nice to be back. Thank you for your nice welcome. This is a pastime of a very exalted person, Maharaj Bharat, who unfortunately, along the path, got a little misdirected. So there are many lessons. We'll talk about three today. But the overall lesson is that one should never, even by mistake, hit the cruise control button while heading or progressing on the path of Krishna consciousness. The cruise control is becoming negligent or becoming complacent. On the other hand, the lesson is that we should all be always very alert. Bandhumoi savadhana mate. Savadhana is that actually it means cautious or alert. While executing devotional service, now regardless of what state of advancement one may be in. There's a lot of echo as I'm hearing myself. Can you turn down the volume a little bit? Thank you. As we're heading on the path of Krishna consciousness, something to be very alert about, very cautious about, is not to let the guard down. In fact, as practicing devotees, being on guard is the greatest protection. Just being on guard, just considering, oh, my spiritual master or shastras have given these injunctions and I should be very carefully considering them, is in itself the greatest protection. And another thing, Now into the pastime. On one hand, we emphasize that the whole process of Krishna consciousness is about building or developing relationships. And there are many varieties of relationships that we develop. One thing to be careful about is the nature of those relationships. A relationship naturally means It's where we are building and operating on each other's trust, right? Without a relationship, one cannot invest or feel or experience trust. However, people have trust regardless of what kind of relationship it is, whether it is spiritual or material, still we're operating on trust. But as spiritualists, we're taught that we build trusting relationships with Krishna and the devotees of Krishna. And part of the trusting relationship is that we give each other full benefit of doubt. Even if the other person is wrong, we still say, well, maybe all the circumstances I don't have in my purview, there may be something else that I'm not aware of. Let me find out. In a distrusting relationship or in a relationship where there's not trust, a person reaches conclusions very quickly. That's one of the features of not having full trust. Coming to conclusions, jumping to conclusions, just based on certain circumstances. Now, while we're building trusting relationships, one of the features of a relationship is that there is affection. That affection turns into attachment. In fact, attachment is one of the landmarks of a relationship on the path of bhakti, attachment to Krishna, asakti. In fact, it is said that we should become attached to devotees. We should become attached to Krishna. Because attachment is the catalyst or the feeder for every activity that happens in that relationship. And this nature of attachment is very tricky. The nature of attachment depends upon the fundamental conception we carry about ourselves and the person or persons we are attached to. If that conception is not clear, then that if the conception is material, then the attachment becomes material. If the conception is spiritual, the attachment is spiritual. While both are attachments, material attachment has its own set of characteristics, and spiritual attachment has a very different set of characteristics. So the call to action is to become spiritually attached. In spiritual attachment, one of the features of that attachment is detachment, if you will. That detachment is characterized by seeing the person for who they are. Contrast that with material attachment, we don't see the other person. Material attachment is all about oneself, it's all about me. Spiritual attachment is about the other person. So there's the very, very different, although they are attachments. In spiritual attachment, when we are looking at the other person, we understand their needs, their concerns, and respect their individuality. So sometimes when they make decisions or do things, although we're talking about devotee-devotee relationship, or even with Krishna, of course. Krishna is the Swarat, he can do whatever he likes. But in spiritual attachment, because there is respect for individuality, we learn to operate with however that individual expresses their individuality. Because we are attached to the person, not to the set of behaviors per se. On the material side, the attachment is such that we predetermine how the behavior should be, because it's about me. And in the material attachment, I am the center of things. So the world revolves around me. Did they talk to me? Did they say this to me? Did they do that to me? How did they treat me like this? What are they thinking about me? Etc. So this differentiating the natures of attachment. One important lesson is just on a practical basis. It's called renting space in someone else's mind. I talk about this often, so I'll say it again. One thing we should not do is rent space in someone else's mind. And that means, in any relationship, we generally wonder, what were they thinking when they said or did that? What was driving them to say or do something that they said or did? Which is all right, so far is okay. The renting begins when we get into their mind and start thinking how they would be thinking. Basically, what we are doing is we are thinking And we are now living in their mind, so considering that they are thinking. This is Atmavat Manyate Jagat. Seeing the world from my perspective and assuming that the rest of the world sees it the same way. For example, somebody said something or did something, and we wonder, what's going on? They said like this. Surely they must be thinking like that. They did like that. I'm very sure. Naturally, if I'm in that situation, this is how I would say and do things. So that is what their behavior is looking like. And if we care to ask the person, were you thinking in like that? And probably they'd think very differently. But we create an entire picture of reality around us just on the basis of how we are thinking about something. And we superimpose that on the other person. They are also thinking like that. And this is the most troublesome in a relationship. This is called renting space. There's already our mind. We don't need another person's mind to deal with. Even if it's a small piece of their mind, it's quite a lot. If we can just work with our mind, that's good enough. And the second thing is, second lesson, is in this case the attachment he had for the animal. There are multiple pieces to it. One is, he was already in such an exalted position that he's not making distinctions between man and animal and all of that. He's just very loving and very caring. However, in that very loving and caring nature is a little misconception that has either crept in or popped up or however it has happened. And that misconception is to not see the soul. It's the bodily conception. And immediately the attachment is to, oh, this poor deer who lost its mother and is completely dependent on me, and I am the shelter giver. If I don't give shelter, what will happen to this little fawn? So in that conception, seeing Krishna as the provider, seeing Krishna as the maintainer, has been pushed to the background. In the life of Sridhar Swami, he was a grihastha before he became sannyasi. And he was considering, should I take sannyas or not? Although he, on one hand he was being pulled to take sannyas, on the other, he was considering, I have a wife and children, and I cannot just walk away from these responsibilities because I am the maintainer. And if I don't care for this family, who will? Which is proper. But he was considering like this. Who will take care of this family? I'm the provider. So that's the misconception. And as he was thinking like that, he saw two lizards crawling on the wall, the mother and baby lizard. And suddenly the baby lizard fell to the ground. Oh, the little baby is separated from the mother. He became very anxious. And he wondered, what about that little baby lizard? Now it's completely without the shelter of its mother. How will it take care of himself? And right next to that baby lizard was a little bug, and the baby lizard opens its mouth and took in the bug. And his realization was, well, Krishna is maintaining everyone. I am thinking I am maintaining. Krishna has made arrangement for every living entity. And so he took sannyas. With proper caution. Idea is one should take care of one's responsibility at any state, but shouldn't forget that ultimately Krishna is the maintainer. We are just tiny instruments in the social unit And we may play a particular role of shelter giving, but ultimately Krishna is the shelter giver. And if we forget that, then there is a danger. The danger, there are two levels of danger. One level is for ourselves to think that we are the controllers or we are the shelter givers, and without us, how will things happen? There is nobody who's indispensable. And the second level of danger is we become the point of intransparency for the other persons. The intransparency is that every living entity has a connection with Krishna. And when that connection isn't enriched or nourished, then there is a danger. The danger of material sort of attachment to develop. Now in this case, Bharat Maharaj, because he is a very thoughtful person and a very considerate person, he is thinking that he has neglected the deer. Which is nice. We take responsibility for things that have happened. However, he is wrongly taking that responsibility. Because the nature of material attachment is such that a person forgets or cannot see reality of things. And he's thinking, I am being negligent. The deer has walked away because I am being negligent. And maybe the deer has a noble heart and he'll come back. And in this way, he's neglecting the very essential aspect of his life. That is, further developing his Krishna consciousness. So while caring requires considering the other person's needs, going out of one's way to help others, extending compassion, all of that, while it is necessary, and it is a nature of a devotee, one should not forget the individuality of a person, and one should not forget that some detachment is necessary. Now, that detachment is a tricky one. Generally, detachment is understood as indifference. Oh, I don't care what they do. We do care. Detachment is different from indifference. Detachment is based on respect for the other person's expression of free will. Because on the material side, in a relationship, there is always expectation. I do this, you should do this. I do this, therefore you should do this. And as long as you're doing what is in response to what I'm doing, hey, we have a nice relationship. That's great. That is called conditional. The nature of a relationship where there is attachment is that one, it is conditional. On the spiritual side, if it is really spiritual, it should be unconditional. The unconditional is, I'm not expecting anything in return. If the other person acts within the relationship, very nice. If they don't act in the relationship, hey, that's okay too. But my involvement in the relationship is not determined by the other person's response or no response. Because it is pleasing to Krishna that I am in the relationship. It's also pleasing to Krishna that I respect the other person's participation or not. I mean, this is how Krishna, in one sense, deals with all of us. We are the rebellious souls who decided not to participate in the relationship with Krishna. And we turned away. It's described that we have taken a bunch of wrong turns. Anyone had the experience of being lost when we're driving somewhere? Especially who drives to Gita Nagari usually gets lost for some reason. We, after driving 13 years, this year also we got lost somewhere. I was driving. And the getting lost begins with the first wrong turn, and then a series of wrong turns after that. So the first wrong turn is that we turned away from Krishna, Bahirmukha Jiva. And since we've turned away from Krishna, we've been taking all sorts of turns and ended up, I can't say here, but ended up in the material world. Ending up here is the right turn, is the correct turn we've taken. Ending up in the shelter of Srila Prabhupada's institution. That's the only right turn we have taken. Everything else was a left turn, I guess. That's the only correct thing that we've done. And that too, in most cases, it didn't happen because we came. It happened because someone else helped us. So the first wrong turn is we turned away from Krishna. So Jiva Goswami explains that if we want to understand how the living entity came into this world, then we have to track our way back. Right? When we are lost, we try to go back the same way we came to the point we recognize, oh, this is where I made the wrong turn. So Jiva Goswami says, you track your way back. And the first thing is, fix the relationship with Krishna. The issue in everything is that underlying is an issue with Krishna. Be it envy, be it pride, be it anger, whatever it is, they're only, when it is subject to another person or persons, the underlying core is that it's the problem with Krishna. We have a problem with Krishna. We have an attitude issue with him. And because we have an attitude issue with him, it all manifests to all of his parts and parcels. So when we fix our attitude towards Krishna, when we learn to appreciate Krishna for how he is being with us, so we took wrong turns, but he has not stopped participating in the relationship with us. He's there. Even if when we did not want him, he's still there as Paramatma. He's still there making so many arrangements for us, whether we acknowledge them or not. Generally, the tendency is, if in a relationship we are not acknowledged, then we step out of it. We become absent as well. If Krishna is not acknowledged by zillions of living entities, but it doesn't matter to him. He's still participating. He's there. There's a story of a son, the prodigal son, if you will, who walks away from the parent and says, I don't need you, I'll figure out on my own, now I'm a grown-up. And walks along, after a long walk, he's hungry, and comes about a particular restaurant. So he goes to the restaurant and says, I'm hungry. And the restaurant owner says, please eat as much as you want. I don't have any money though. Oh, you don't have to pay. Oh, wow. I don't have to pay. This is really nice. And it's an all you can eat. And he thinks, see, my mother or father said it was very difficult out in the world. It's really not so bad. I can. There are some nice people in this world. And they are feeding me. This is pretty good. Who needs that relationship? Goes further along, it's the end of day, is very tired, wants to rest, comes about a motel or whatever, inn, and he asks the innkeeper, can I stay for the night? Oh, sure. I don't have any money though. No problem, there's room you can take. Wow, such people with such nice, good qualities. Who needs that relationship? I was thinking that, or I was being told out there in the world, it's all scary and dangerous and, you know, so then he asks, well, let me ask you a question. He asks the innkeeper next morning, I have a doubt. Do you let anyone and everyone stay if they don't have money? He said, no, of course not. This is not a charity, this is a business. So why did you let me stay? He said, your parent called and said that you had left home in a huff and that you might be tired. So they paid by credit card. They already paid for you. They were expecting you to come. Same thing at the restaurant. Then he realizes that although the parent is unseen, he's made arrangements for the comfort of the living entity. So the living entity who's turned away from Krishna, although we don't care, Krishna has made arrangement, sufficient arrangement for us to move through. If there was no air supply, we couldn't breathe. No light, we couldn't see. No other human beings of our species, there's nothing to relate to. All the food has been provided by Mother Earth. There's a whole system created for rain, sunlight, nourishment, nutrients, a system for harvesting. All of that's been created already, even for the atheist. Because Krishna doesn't stop participating in that relationship. So one may be very detached, but without the right conception, it won't work. In this case, he has this one little, I can't just say little, but it's one thing. It's a misidentification. Yet, all of his natural qualities of compassion and humility and nobility, they're all there, except that they're all mixed up. It's mixed up with the wrong conception. Just as Arjuna. Prabhupada in the Bhagavad Gita keeps reminding us, oh, Arjuna is a devotee. It's natural for him to feel compassion. It's natural for him to feel the pain of others. It's natural for him to be selfless and all of that. But it's all mixed up with the wrong conception. And that's the suffering. He's unnecessarily suffering at the walking away of a tiny deer or a fawn. And because of the misconception, he's now lamenting and suffering and is losing time. He's wasting his time. Now, I don't know the answer, but I've been wondering, how come no one else in Pulaha Ashram tapped him on the shoulder and said, Prabhu, what's going on? You haven't been showing up for the program. It's not like he's all alone in Pulaha Ashram. There are other sages and other persons, I'm assuming. That's why he went there for the association. And no one said anything. Or someone said something and he didn't listen. I have no idea, but I've been wondering. How come no one said anything? Is it said anywhere? Why? So is it solitude internally or that there was nobody around? I mean, he went to Pulaha Ashram. I'm assuming it's someone, is just that he withdrew himself from that. That's the danger coming up of solitude. Okay. Well, that's for the next class or whenever, when we talk of solitude or withdrawing from the association. One can be in association with devotees and be completely withdrawn, and that's a whole different danger. Anyway. Anyway, so those are some thoughts. Any comments or questions about attachments or nature or whatever? Jai Jagannath Prabhu. Bhava, yeah. What to do?
That's considered a perfectional state.
Yeah, bhava.
And in your description, he's coming under the sway of the Bali concept of life somehow or other, and so on. So there are many reasons for that. My question and concern is that what to speak of. If I'm not on the platform of Bhav, I'm not on the platform of Narsinivritti, I hardly have any faith. You know, I'm just trying to struggle with just how to associate with devotees properly and so on.
Yeah.
So Bharatamaraj can come under the sway of some type of misconception polluting his relationship, then what to speak of devotees like ourselves who would be having so many blind spots. And even though we hear daily and associate with devotees which offer some protection, but still in our attempts to have relationships with one another, it seems that inevitably these types of misconceptions will pollute the relationships without fail. until we come to a more mature stage. So with the speaking of a mature devotee, even ourselves, so how do we remain enthusiastic about cultivating relationships, even though it seems like it's going to be very rare that they will really be on the spiritual platform from this type of description?
Yeah, so first of all, it's not that everyone on Bhava platform falls down. It's one example, and that's so stark that it makes it way to Bhagavatam to be cautious about. That even there, that's how I began, that even at that stage, whatever stage, we shouldn't check out or become like, now everything is fantastic from here on. That stage is very dangerous. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that to come to Bhava platform, and he gives us some assurance there. Bhavo jnana tapasa puta mad bhava magataha. The many persons who reached Bhava platform. But to reach there, one should be able to give up raga, bhaya, and krodha. In one sense, these are the hurdles in a relationship. A material sort of attachment, fear, and anger. And as long as one is attached to or operating on any of these, one will not come to Bhava stage. So say it differently, the what keeps one back or holds one back from the stage of purity and ecstasy and love of God, the ultimate whatever. Let's say, on a practical perspective, even going beyond anartha nivritti, let's operate there, okay? Even for that, if one is not conscious and conscientiously identifying and working on one's attachments, fears, and anger, you know, these are things that hold one back. And unfortunately, in the pre-anartha nivritti stage, we operate on these things. We operate on raga, bhaya, and krodha. So right from the beginning of bhakti stage, when it comes to adav shraddha stage, even from there on, it's important for every one of us as sadhakas to consider, what is the conception I'm operating on? If that's not there, meaning bhakti becomes a series of physical activities only, then one will one day fall into that nice pitfall. And those pitfalls are in one sense helpful because they reorient, or they are supposed to help us reset. Whoa, why did this happen? What conception was I been moving along that I fell into this situation? So bhakti is not just a series of activities, but bhakti is a constant reaffirmation of the right conceptions. And, you know, and if that reaffirmation of conceptions doesn't happen, then the pitfall is not too far away. It's right around the kitty corner. One will find oneself in a ditch or in a pothole or a pitfall if one is not operating on the right conceptions. So either before or during or after, it's important to reset our conceptions. Before I'm going into some activity, what is the conception with which I'm entering that activity? During, let me for a moment, am I operating in this service or this activity or this interaction with the right conception here? That I am the servant of Krishna, this is an individual, whatever is that conception that needed, am I operating in the right conception? Or after? Oh, I think I totally missed the point there. I was trying to be the controller, or I was operating on wrong conception. Let me see if I can reset that. That's necessary. And the reaffirmation of the right conception happens during Bhagavatam class, or during the hearing and hearing and chanting time. This is why they're so important. They set the stage for the rest of our activities as to what conceptions are we carrying during the day. And it does happen that 5 minutes later it vanishes. That's the unfortunate problem. Because our consciousness drifts from the right conceptions to the conceptions that are underlying as swabhava, conditioned nature. We operate on conditioned natures most often. So bhakti is a process of very ardently cultivating that free will that is against conditioned nature. So it goes back to the first point that I started with, that once we hit the cruise control button, that's where the problem begins. Cruise control means we allow for the conditioned nature to creep in and drive us, versus very actively, alertly considering, oh, this is the wrong choice. My nature pushes me to do this. But bhakti or the previous acharyas or guru and wants me to act in this way. And as difficult as it is, I have to act in this way for my own good. And one who doesn't consider like that is, if not now, tomorrow or whenever, is back in that pitfall. And you know, if it happens many years later, then it's very lamentable that, oh, after all these years, I find myself way back there. I've lost so much time. And again, the only way to move forward is change the conception. So as long as conceptions are not clear, our goal is that these conceptions become our nature. And they only become nature when we practice these conceptions. Nothing becomes nature or second nature unless it's practiced. Like humility is something we have to practice. It doesn't come about. We can feign it. We can say certain things that are humble. But deep down, humility as a quality, for example, doesn't come unless it's practiced. Or unless the other qualities that are occupying our consciousness are not removed by Krishna, for which Shravanam, Kirtanam are our mainstay activities. I keep forgetting the Bengali of that verse, Bahujanma Kare. You know, for many lifetimes you can do hearing and chanting without the right conception. Well, what will get? Nothing out of it. The right conceptions are necessary. And that's why guru or the sadhus or shastra, they instill the right conception again and again and again and again. The stories are being repeated. This different circumstances, but the same conceptions or wrong conceptions are being highlighted for us to learn. And it's different circumstances, different personalities. He's at the stage of Vanaprastha entering sannyas, is somewhere grahastha somewhere, there's a sannyasi somewhere, there's a great personality there, there's a fallen personality here, whatever. Still, if the right conceptions are not there, there's trouble. In fact, this is compassion. Krishna is using, in one sense, we can say, Bharat Maharaj is to teach us. We may not be taking care of a deer, we may be taking care of something else or someone else, and the still problem can be there. Conceptions, right concept, very necessary to hear the right conceptions, to confirm if the conceptions are clear, to operate on them. Ashraya and then Bhakti Tarek.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
I don't know the reference. I didn't have time to look it up. But there's this statement, Bhagavad Gita, I think Srila Prabhupada was making the statement, that in the beginning, attachment is to the service, and then it's to the object of the service after that. I don't know the context. Do you know what that is? It's in 10. Okay. So I was wondering how that... if you would be kind enough to discuss a little how that dynamic works in a ideal setting? You know, the
how the dynamic works in the ideal setting, that the attachment is to the service.
I mean, it can happen in a lot of different ways, you know, and but you know, ideally, it should be just a smooth transition. So how that would work if it actually just, you know, goes right from attachment to service to Krishna to attachment to Krishna and everyone else. We're talking about changing from material conception to spiritual conception in our relationships. So in that context, actually coming to the stage of having a spiritual attachment to a person through service, how does that dynamic ideally work?
You're asking me how ideally a person goes from attachment to the service to attachment to Krishna?
Yeah, and when
coming
I'm saying...
Coming from
wherever, material energy, basically, you know. When I say Krishna, it doesn't just mean Krishna, because as you said, our attachment to everybody else in a spiritual conception means it's also attachment to Krishna. How can you have a spiritual attachment to somebody else without Krishna?
In the picture.
In the picture. So it's both. I don't mean to separate, like, your class from this point. It's the same point, or I'm trying to make it the same point. Transitioning from... It seems to me that that's how we genuinely get a spiritual attachment to each other. That's the idea that I'm working with.
Well, it may operate like that, or it may seem like that. But the right process is, before Bhajana Kriya, there is Sadhu Sangha. So there may be service, Bhajana Kriya activities. But whether we recognize it or not, the operating principle is there is Sadhu Sangha. Otherwise one cannot become attached to service. On the conscious level, we may be attached to service. Because there's a mixture. There's a mixture of what we like, what we don't like. In Gita Nagari, one devotee was asking a question to Maharaj. When I find myself in a spot where I wasted my time or something, and I want to come back, should I just do things that I really like in devotional service? And Maharaj's answer was, no, do things that you're asked to do, even if you don't like them. Because tendency to go back to what I like is coming back in the wrong way. It's not what I like or don't like. So what brings us back to the right position is not what I like or don't like, it's the words of a sadhu, even if I don't like the words. Generally, it's the words we don't like that actually puts us back on place. So the attachment to service conception is, in the beginning, we begin with gross and move to subtle. So the idea of where our senses meet with certain objects to serve Krishna, that's the grosser side. But it doesn't last, because we forget the person or persons who engaged us in the service. So as long as we remember, oh, this Prabhu has very kindly engaged me in this service, my spiritual master has very kindly engaged me in this service, if that consciousness is clear, then the attachment is to the person, not to the activity per se. I should say it this way. Because the attachment is to the person, there's attachment to the activity. That's the right way. And the attachment to the person is what we nurture and sustain. And if we forget the person from the picture, then we grab on to just the activity, and now the person is absent. Relationship means persons, not activity. And that's the beginning of the influence of or the injection of material perspective into it. So without the person in the picture, it's like having sweet rice with sand in it. There is rice, there is milk, there is sugar. It's nicely boiled and cooked, and it has fragrance. It has all the dry fruits and whatever, you know, things that we add into different persons, add different things in the sweet rice, saffron and this and that. But sand also included. You can't enjoy it. There's no real rasa in it. All looks fantastic, smells great, but no rasa. Because we forget the persons in the picture. If the person is in the picture, even if the rice is burnt, it still is wonderful. Doesn't matter what it is, it's great.
I accept everything that you said. At the beginning, Sarsadhu Sangha is not on the spiritual platform, though. We're just
attached.
It doesn't matter. So that's a different point than what I'm asking about. So I'm asking about how we get to actually having a spiritual conception of the people that we're serving.
Yes.
And that's something we practice at the beginning.
Correct.
Okay.
And in the beginning,
yeah.
From the sadhu side, it's always instilling the right conception. From the bhakta side, if you will, even if it's not the right conception, still the attachment is genuine because it's to a genuine sadhu. The example given is this child is sick and the mother wants to give medicine. She puts the bitter medicine in a laddu and gives it to the child. The child happily takes the laddu. From the child's perspective, I'm getting laddu. Mother's perspective, he is getting medicine. It's the same transaction, seen differently, yet the medicine will act. So even if wrongly, but there's some attachment, that's the beginning. It has to be attached somewhere. Lord Kapila explains, one should transfer the intensity of attachment from the material to a sadhu. If that attachment's not there, bhakti cannot germinate. So even if it is material, that's okay. In the beginning, it's okay. And then the conception should generate from there. Like, we start with zero spiritual conception, so straight on to say that I'm spiritually connected to a person is not right. We don't even know what that means. Derek?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for your talk on conceptions. Okay. I have one question. You're saying that we're operating with all of these misconceptions. We should constantly be checking the conceptions. And one of the ways that you mentioned was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam class. But oftentimes I find that we're even hearing with misconceptions. So how can we hear properly in order to check our conceptions?
We just hear properly. When we hear, for a person who's actively listening or hearing properly, when we hear something, and if it's a misconception, then naturally there's a clash in the right conception and the wrong conception we are carrying. That's one. Second, if the conception is right conception and it matches, So therefore, the Bhagavatam is meant to be a back and forth where we check. I understood this way. I did not understand that one. What's the right... These kinds of exchanges are necessary. Either in the class, after, discussion, however. But it's necessary to reset our conceptions. Generally, it's described that we hear with a bunch of filters. We have a very nice filtering system. As the conceptions come in, if we have certain conceptions and they match, they go in. And conceptions that don't match, we happily discard. Like we don't even remember that that was spoken. Even if it was spoken, we think, it's not for me. I'm still a new bhakta. It's not for me. like that. Or whatever is the reason that we filter them out. In English, it's called having a bean in the ear. We just don't hear it, although it's being spoken. We don't hear it. We don't get it. And that's okay. It's spoken again and again till that bean comes off. Oh, that's what's being spoken. But we hear actively. And the best way to know we've heard actively is when we get the opportunity to repeat some things we've heard or discuss. You know, when we put the words to those conceptions, then we actually know, whoa, I think I totally got it all wrong. Because there are nuances to it. It's nice for devotees to discuss. I heard like this, and this is what it means. I'll give you an example. In Gita Nagari, as part of a discussion, in the Q&A section, something I said that hearing is more important than the experience of learning something. It was in a particular context. You know, for example, to hear that sense gratification is dangerous. To learn that way is better than to experience sense gratification and the concomitant suffering and then say, ah, sense gratification is dangerous. So when two days later, in the Q&A session, someone wrote a question to Maharaj saying, I heard that hearing is more important than experience. And so Maharaj said, really? I said, well, when Rukmini had never met Krishna, she only heard about Krishna. And so her intensity for Krishna grew like anything. On the day of her marriage to Shishupal, Krishna showed up and grabbed her hand and put her on the chariot. I'm sure she liked that experience. And then he said, Kamsa. Kamsa always heard about Krishna. And he was afraid of Krishna. So when Krishna came to Mathura, climbed up his throne, dragged him down and punched him in the chest, he had an experience. And then he said to the person, be careful how you quote something out of context, because you'll get a wrong idea. The point was not that experience has no value. That was not the point at all. So like that. We pick certain things and we drop certain. We don't see the fuller. Why? Because one tagline stuck in, oh, hearing is more important than experience, but without understanding the... Okay. Is that right? Okay. Yeah. Acharya Nishtha.
Just on that same point, maybe pushing it a little further, how does that first-class intelligence develop? Perhaps you can extrapolate that just by hearing... This is a superior form, then you have to go through it, you have to experience.
First-class intelligence develops on the basis of faith. As our faith is developed, our intelligence is developing. Because it is not just from hearing. Bahu janma kare shravana kirtan. It is just sitting and hearing. Of course, that's helpful. But faith has to develop. So it's a series of things that has to happen. One has to hear, one has to apply. And when one applies an instruction, one experiences truth. And when one experiences truth, one's faith in the instruction and the instructor becomes stronger. So one goes back to hear. And as they hear more, they apply more. When they apply more, they experience truth according to what was spoken. Then the faith increases. Then the first class intelligence begins. Whatever words my guru is saying, that is true. What I'm seeing and hearing, that may not be true. Because I'm seeing and hearing on the basis of my experience and conceptions, if it's not driven by the words of guru. In Bhagavad Gita 15th chapter, Krishna talks about Shastra Chakshu or Jnana Chakshu. We see according to what we hear. And that's the process, to hear from Guru and apply. Hearing from Guru is not itself, in and of itself, complete. It must be applied. If one doesn't apply, one will not understand the efficacy of Guru's instruction. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Premanande.